Oh, yeah, we're going to work together. Hey, everyone, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9, and coming at you from the very center of the universe, and that is Clear Creek County, Colorado. What do you think, Lisa?
It is a beautiful spot, but boy, dude, is there a lot of people out there today.
Well, everyone knows where to come. You're to the center of the universe, right?
It is gorgeous.
And that's the voice of Lisa Reinecke. And Lisa and I are going to be chatting it up here for a good while here about her works. But before we do that, I want to thank all our sponsors, because without sponsors, a community radio like this would not be possible. And I am sponsoring this particular hour here, so you can read more about my work, Sisyphus Wins, at my website at jerryfabianic.com. And so Lisa is a majority holder of Our House Publications, author of 4 published children's picture books and 1 published nonfiction historical memoir. Lisa's books have been showered with awards, such as a 2017 Mom's Choice Gold Award. Congratulations on that. Yay. Book Excellence Award. Another yay?
Yeah, another yay.
Okay, and Story Monsters Purple Dragon Award.
I know that one was a surprise, but I was really happy about that.
Oh, good. Well, we'll have to ask you why it's a surprise here in a minute. She's earned 5-star reviews from Reader's Favorite. Lisa serves as a head writer and on-camera talent in her videos. Her books are entertaining, yet focused on social issues that engage children and parents to discuss. So welcome, Lisa.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. You've been writing for some time now.
I have. I actually didn't really feel like I was writing, but I was writing. I've been writing all my life. So I went back and I looked at everything I'd written and go, wow, I really have written a lot.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start, like when you were in grade school or something?
I did sort of. I used to write songs, and it's kind of funny to go back and read some of those songs that I wrote, because I can't sing. But even when I was little, 12, 13-year-old, I would write songs, and then I found poems that I would write to my mom and my grandma and in school. So I think it's kind of been ingrained in me, and I just didn't realize it was there until right now.
That talent there, yeah, that's, you know, come up with, so I'm going to get, I'll come back to that a little bit later there, and, you know, do you have a muse, that sort of thing there, but why children's books?
Oh, I think like one.
Explain.
Because sometimes the weirdest things come out, like the latest book that I came out with was Wilhelmina's Wish, and it was about a fairy with a unibrow, and I started thinking, wow, what would a fairy look like with a unibrow? Or why did God make fingernails or something strange like that? I'll go, okay, that would make a kind of a cool book. And so my brain kind of works like that.
Okay, in these off ways, we'll put it that way.
It's an off way.
Off way,
really,
yeah.
Way off.
But that's what makes it fun, though, I think, for kids.
It does make it fun. And sometimes in the middle of all that, we'll come together a purpose for the story and something we can discuss with our kids that has a moral that parents can get into a discussion with their kids over.
Okay. And do you think of issues while you're writing, you know, maybe it's a social issue, for example, you know, ethnic groups, etc., okay, to incorporate more so that these could be great lessons for kids, and or maybe bullying, for example?
Well, Wings and Feet, you know, is about bullying, and it's about being friends with somebody that has physical differences than you do.
Okay.
So it's about approaching those differences and not being afraid to approach the other person and say, hey, we're different. Mm-hmm. You have wings, I have feet. Let's see what we can do together. It's not purposeful. I'll tell you that on Wings and Feet, I tried to write just a story about a butterfly. I got up in the middle of the night with this story in my brain, and I just had to get up and put it down on paper. Of course, it had, you know, many, many rewrites, and that's when it came together for me. Like, wow, this really has a lot of meaning to it.
Mm-hmm. And do you, I assume you have kids yourself?
Oh, yes. I have 4 and 5 grandkids. Okay. Lots of inspiration.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, I was going to say, are your children little? But if you got grandchildren.
No, and I taught Sunday school for 4 and 5-year-olds. I love, love, love that age. And I will say to those people out there that send their children to Sunday school, we know a lot about your family.
They tell you, well, even public schools, they'll do it. So, you know what happened at home last night?
I know a lot about what happens on Saturday night.
Oh, that's hilarious there. But when you're talking to the kids in Sunday school or wherever, your kids, your grandchildren, do they suggest ideas, or maybe even they're just talking and then something jumps into mind for you?
It does. With Wings and Feet, I keep going back to that one. Sure. But with Wings and Feet, Tavin, one of our middle boys, he had a butterfly that was his friend. And he goes, he just wouldn't leave me alone. He followed me around the house and he keeps going, this butterfly, it landed on my cheek. It landed on my spirit. And he was my friend. And we ran through here and we ran through there. And Mimi, don't you think you could write a story about that? Yeah, mm-hmm. And I tried, and it just wouldn't come out until I went to sleep.
Okay, and talk about that, Lisa, because as a writer, people ask when I write, and I interview authors all the time, and everyone has their own habits, and when is the best time to write. But the middle of the night, after a few hours sleep, it just seems like it's like these muses come together. Is that happening?
And I won't call it a vision because that's weird, but it comes to you, the words just start going around and around in your head. And sometimes you go, oh, I'm so tired, I want to go back to sleep. But if you don't give in to that and you just get up and write down what's on your mind, you can go back and it takes many, many rewrites after you get that down, but at least it gives you a starting point and some basics to get down on paper.
Yeah, I often say that when I write fiction, I'm not creating a story. I'm more bringing it to consciousness, that it's already out there.
It is already. It's kind of in your brain, and you've kind of been thinking about it a long time, but doesn't come together quite yet until you subconsciously relax and let it go.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're writing, do you have, okay, this is the way it's going to end, or is it just simply unfold and the ending is a surprise for you when you get to it as much as it might be for the reader?
Sometimes. With the football flyboy, I didn't really know where I was going to end. I kind of had a loose outline. I started going through those letters and I go, well, it's going to get kind of boring if I don't pick a place that we're going to just cut it off. So I decided to cut it off on New Year's. So we had gotten through Christmas at that lonely time. I said, oh, we're just going to bring it full circle. So we're going to stop the letters at Christmas. And then we're going to finish up our story and tie all those loose ends together. Then I found the last letter right before he came home. So, okay, we're going to put that at the very, very end and tie it all together.
Okay, now let's go back into Football Flyboy. We're on that now. What is the story essentially about?
The story is about my dad and the Cannon family. You'll get to know more than just him. We have so many stories right now in the news that are about bad men. Not bad men, but the things we're bringing to life, what these men have done that's not acceptable. And we're not hearing stories about good men. There are a ton of good men, and we need to hear those stories. When I started going through these letters, I didn't know if he was going to be a good man or bad man. I'm reading about this little 19-year-old kid. I didn't know if he was going to be good or if he was going to be bad during that time. So he's a little bad, but he doesn't qualify for the news of what we go through today. I thought, wow, this story needs to be told. Because he had a lot of self-sacrifice, a lot of self-discipline to be over there in World War II with guys going into town, being in France, and you'll hear about those in the letters. But he had a lot of self-discipline and a lot of focus to what he was going to go home to. He focused on what he couldn't see rather than what he could see to get him through that.
Okay, and so why Football Flyboy? Why the title?
Well, he was a hotshot football star in Little Shawnee, Oklahoma. Okay. He was a tackle guard. Thought he was really hot stuff. So in class, all these football guys, of course, Oklahoma is a football town anyway. Well, back in 1942, they were really football. my mom was a drama reader, which is probably where all these rhymes come from in my head. But in class, he would say to his teacher's name was Alva, "Alva, if you don't have Mary Jo read that lesson today, we're leaving class." And he and all his football cronies would get up and walk out of class and they'll clear out the whole room. So that's, he wasn't a football star, but he had this wavy hair and he was the star guard tackle and he was called Buck in school. So that's where the football came from. So he thought he was really hot, got his silver wings, thought he was really something then because he was flying those big planes, and he got over there and he was humbled. So I thought it was appropriate that, you know, kind of that attitude that he had, football and flyboy. Mm-hmm. And then he became he changed and he evolved, and you'll get to see all of that through the letters and through getting to know the family afterwards. You'll see how the war did change him and make him into that man.
Yeah, and war has a strange way of doing that to young people. Move it there, because, you know, life is so on the up, you know, hey, you know, I'm a jock, I could do this or that. And then you get over there where, you know, people die.
Yes.
And that's a real eye-opener.
It really is. Now, he went in at the end of the war. So this isn't, he's not a star on the football team or big team or anything. And he's not an ace war hero or anything, but that's what makes the story work.
Mm-hmm.
He's just the everyday guy that came out of high school, went into cadet school, and with 160 flight hours under his belt, they gave him a C-46 airplane and said, off you go.
Mm-hmm. And that's a story of life for so many, is that all of a sudden something happens and you're on a trajectory to wherever. And and you know, that experience right there is, we can all can identify whether we've gone to war or not, whatever it is. But when we grow up, when we're teenagers, okay, we're full of angst and everything, but we're also full of cockiness and that. You know, comes with the territory. We have to start figuring out life, right? Sorting it out. And then you run into this pretty incredible experience.
Kind of slaps you upside the head and says, well, hey, here you are.
Yeah.
I mean, when he got to Iceland and Greenland, he was just amazed. He'd never been out of Shawnee, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And when you, is the book laid out in letters now you've read them, or do you tell a story narrative?
So we have an audio book too. I'll just plug that real quick. So we hired an actor to do the letter. So it's laid out. Every chapter starts out with a letter,
mm-hmm.
and they go in chronological order. So he starts in Austin, Texas, then Bangor, Maine, Bangor to Labrador, Greenland, Iceland, France, Scotland. I mean, it follows him around, and he never gets any letters. In fact, he gets two batches of letters because he's flying all around the world. So you start each chapter with a letter, and that brought to memory something about his life or something about the cannons that made him into that person you're seeing into that letter. Then the letter in that same chapter, you may get a glimpse of, okay, here's what made him be this way in the letter, but now you get to see in his life how he evolved,
mm-hmm.
and what that turned out to be, what he turned out to be like because of his raising and those letters, if that makes sense.
It does. Sense. That's fascinating, you know, because through his own words, you see the development of this character.
Here's a good example I'll bring up is there's a chapter in there called The Mink Coat. In one of the letters, this is kind of funny. He says, "Honey, when I get home, I'm going to buy you that mink coat and new DeSoto. Oh, by the way, sell the car. We need the money." So I just thought it was so funny. It was all in one kind of paragraph.
Okay.
But then when Mom was, there's a picture of it in there. When Mom got her, she got her mink coat. He bought her a mink coat. She was about 60 years old, and it was kind of funny. It talks about in there, he would go to church, put $5 in the collection plate, and here she was in her mink coat sitting in church. Don't you know, she was the talk of the team there.
Oh, nice. Even when you're 60, you can still be talking.
Yeah, but they didn't go anywhere. I mean, she went to church, so she wore it to church. She wouldn't wear it to the movies because it might get butter on it.
Nice. Yeah. Now, this is a big leap for you to write this book compared to the children's books.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And
I found out I like the word really.
Really?
Really.
You really, really like really, huh?
when I started running it through all the edits in the program, I go, really? Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Isn't that funny how we'll, because we have a way of, that's why you have good editors.
Yeah.
Who pick up on, and then it's like nails on the chalkboard thing. It's like,
Well, when we went in to read it, it had been edited and edited and edited. And when we went into the recording studio to record it, we found an error. And I go, oh.
Oh, my God.
So next time, yeah. I know that we have to read it first in the studio. And then then we'll call it.
Oh, yeah. When I put my book out, and I took some good advice from someone. And did it through Ingram Spark. So I ordered like 6-8 copies, just as beta copies.
Good idea.
And read it through in literally a book form. And how many times I knew that story, read it through. I still found 8 errors.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And now many, many writer or readers probably would not have picked up on them, but I picked up on them.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, okay, so we're going to correct these or upload the file one more time to get it just right. So there's a lot that happens in
there. There is. And I don't think people realize how much editing has to go into it. And you get to about the 100th time of reading it and go, I just don't want to read it again.
Yeah. It wears you out.
Yeah.
Is what it gets down to. So when in your writing, is there an author, others that were kind of like heroes for your models that you kind of like look at and say, hey, I want to be write more like him, her?
There are, and I can't put the name on it. Shel Silverstein for children is my big one, because those books are so full of meaning. When you get to the end of it, it's a simple concept with just a lot of heart. Mm-hmm. For adults, I can't think of the guy's name right off the tip of my tongue, but he wrote This Is a Soul. It's just a story with a lot of, it's got humor, and it's got sadness, and it's got a lot of meaning. So those are the kind I like that has something in it that I can take away, something that I can underline. Like, I need to know that in a book.
Yeah, and what have you learned that in writing? I mean, if you can give yourself advice right now, looking back, over your career, what have you learned? What is the thing? And then you would share that with others, to do.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Here's the main thing that I would learn, I would tell myself, is don't listen to everybody. Because everybody, you're going to get conflicting advice out there. Everybody's going to tell you something. And everybody wants a piece of your, everybody wants something. You take the free webinars. Well, they want, so you're going to get 5 minutes of good information, and then they're going to want something. So if I had to start all over again, I would say enroll in a class, get some good instruction, maybe go to a few webinars. But at that point, once you've got enough information and you've done your homework, you've got enough information, you're just going to get more of the same, and don't let them snag you.
Yeah, and it is that sit down and do it. There's Stephen Pressfield, who wrote a work, and it was called The War of Art. And he draws it from the Greek Thucydides, whoever wrote The Art of War. And his whole point is that what we keep running into is resistance. And a lot of that is our own negativity within our brain. I can't do
that
this. And you have you found that, discovered that?
And sometimes you'll start to double think yourself or outthink yourself or talk yourself out of it. There's a lot of gut that goes in with art, and writing is art. Mm-hmm. So anything else, music, a lot of it is you're going to go with your gut. You are your own worst critic. So sometimes I think you do need somebody to come back and say, no, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. You're doing good. So that's where a mentor, I think Cal is good for that.
Yeah.
Is the mentorship, is helping you, helping mentor you through that.
And Cal is the
Colorado Authors League. I think they're good at helping mentor you through that and giving you some direction.
Yeah, and particularly, and I would assume there, what I discovered, that there's two polars of writers, and many, or somewhere in between. One is the planner who plans everything out, and the other is the pantser.
The your, what?
The pants. Are you right by the seat of your pants?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that you?
I'm a seat of the pants girl. I do a little bit of planning because I have to map it out what I've done. And as I get to the next chapter, I go, okay, that would be good here or that would be good there. But I don't sit down and draw.
Schematic.
No. It just kind of comes out. Then I go back and I do rewrites and add. If you can just get the basic of your story down first, then you can go back and add all your descriptive and embellish your story.
Mm-hmm. Did you find a different tact when you were writing Football Flyboy compared to the children's books?
Oh, yes.
How?
I needed to add more descriptive, because with a children's book, you've got your illustrator doing your descriptions for you. So people have a little visual there to go with your words. Now, on my last book that I did, Bart's Escape Out the Gate, I don't know if you know this, but my illustrator was 16.
Oh, wow.
And she's going to be at the one of the Castle Rock Library with me. I can't remember the date. It's coming up here pretty soon, but she's going to go with me so that I can introduce her and people can meet her. She's incredible. But I didn't give her any direction on that. I just wanted to see what she came out with. And then as we went through, I said, no, we want to see more of this or a little less of that. But she did an incredible job of taking the words and drawing out what I saw in my head. So you have that visual to go with your children's book, and you have to do all of that visual in a memoir or a novel. You have to describe it for people so they can close their eyes and they can see what you're trying to tell them without being overly descriptive, because that gets boring.
Yeah.
She had a white brooch with a pin in the middle and a colorful little gold thing around it.
Yeah, that's it. My editor calls it something similar to that, RUE, resist the urge to explain.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes you just have to allow the reader to say, you know, they could figure this out.
Yeah. Give them enough that they could get a little hint of what it would look like. Like in the children's book, I gave the illustrator enough to draw the figure.
Mm-hmm.
So she had enough to go on. Same thing with an adult book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have read books where I will get lost in it and skip over that part. And that's what I wanted to resist the urge to do. It's not a long Football Flyboy is not a long book, but I wanted to resist that urge to put extra words in there just to make it, to add 100 pages.
Yeah, and I think you're getting at something, maybe, if this is your point, at least for me, is that sometimes we just want to fill it out because if someone's going to pay, say, $15 for a book.
Oh, they're expensive. They're hugely expensive now. Yeah. And a hardback hardcover is really expensive.
Yeah. Absolutely, to produce and sell.
Yeah. Yes, and purchase.
And if you write a novel, you know, it's 98 pages long, people just, by the fact that it's 98 pages, it could be the best piece of writing ever in the history of humanity.
Right.
But it's only 98 pages.
Yeah.
And so we also know that it's great, you know, A, I love to write. B, I love it when people read my stories. But C, I like it when they buy it, too.
It makes you be able to write the next one. Because if they don't buy it, you don't have any money to produce the next one.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not like we make a fortune off of writing. Really, what we do is plug it into the next project that we're going
yeah,
into.
That's what I think of, if you ever read Jim Harrison's works, and Legends of the Fall, have you seen
that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that was on one of his short stories. They're all his stories. I don't think he wrote a novel. All of his stories are novellas, you know,
maybe
100 pages or so. But there's three, every book is a trilogy, three separate stories, so he would write these novellas, and you know, which was a great format too. You read the story. You could sit down in one reading, literally, and you know, and then you set it aside.
And you don't get bored with.
Mm-hmm. You know, he tells a great story.
Wait for the next book because you want to read it.
Yeah, I think it's in there. So, no, it's crazy what goes through our heads because we want to tell a great story.
Yes.
And you know, to get it out there in a great way that people will subscribe to it and buy it and everything, but. So it's a balance, you know. I mean, you don't want to write War and Peace, yet you don't want to crank out just 98 pages and say, I got a novel.
You know, to me, right around 250 to 300 words is a really good length of a book to not go over, not to get lost in the middle. Sometimes you can get lost in the middle and go, why do I need to know this? Or they wind you up so long that you lost interest before you got to the heart of the story.
Right. And at that point, maybe you need to write a trilogy instead. Or part one, part two, or something of that nature.
And you know, the funny thing about this now is I've done the one memoir, but now there were thousands. First of all, there were thousands and thousands of letters in this footlocker that I opened. I just happened to start with the war when he first went over, but now I've gone back and I found the cadet letters when he first started flying. And that is so interesting. I'm going to go backwards, and instead of going forwards in a trilogy, I'm going to kind of go backwards and write the one when he's in cadet school, because it's so interesting to learn how he learned to fly.
Yeah.
And what he went through there.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's great stuff there. And because, you know, just touching back again on Football Flyboy, because it is a story of a real person, a real man.
It is.
And it's a heroic story.
And we get to know a lot of the Cannon family while we're going through it. You've read that part about Aunt Gladass. He's found her name is Gladys, but he would call her Aunt Gladass because she was at every family gathering. She would walk in the door and have sugar your Aunt Gladass. And she would put her hand on her forehead and just faint and then fan out her thing so everybody would give her attention when she walked in the door. I think it's fabulous because we all have somebody in the family that we just go, oh, they're here. What would we have missed if Aunt Gladass hadn't walked in the door?
Yeah. Oh, perfectly. And then that name, that play on her name, because if you just call her Gladys, it loses the whole power. You know, because when you say Gladass, it just, boom. I mean, you know.
No, I feel sorry for all the people whose real name is Gladys now, because they're not helpful
either. Don't blame me.
No. Or,
you know, stuff like that. Let me jump back to your children's books, because I had a question. You know, like you had mentioned about your illustrator, this particular one was is 16, and which is great, you know, in so many ways. Do you feel... or do you have a problem with, like, you have to detach from, you write the script, you write, you know, the story, but then you really have to step back from it?
Oh, boy, you do. You have to let them, you have to remember at that point is they have a vision in their work, like you have a vision in your work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you just let them go and see what they come back with. Mm-hmm. So she gave me a drawing, a rough drawing of where she was going to go. Well, then it was okay for me to say, let's go a little bit more this direction. But her creativeness was more than I could have ever directed her to do.
Now, how many other, you've had other illustrators?
I've had three illustrators. One of them was my son, and that's the most popular book I have. I can't figure it out.
Okay, shout out to the kids.
Oh, I know. It's the very first book I did. It's Arnold, the Cute Little Pig with Personality. And it's about our real little pig. Because we had, you know, you see online, oh, the cute little teacup pig. Well, no, they eat. And if they eat, they're going to get big. So that's our story about Arnold. Well, Stephen drew the pictures. He did them on the computer drawings. It's a real simple book with real simple words at the bottom, so it's great for those 2, 3, 4-year-olds. So it's one of the most popular books that I have. Mm-hmm. And then we had Scott McDonald did the ones for David's Christmas Wish and Wings and Feet, and he did a phenomenal job. And Annalise has done Bart's Escape Out the Gate, and now she's doing Wilhelmina's Wish, and she'll be done this month on that one.
Okay, and I'm looking at Bart's Escape. Is that an elephant? What is it?
It's a dinosaur.
Dinosaur. Okay. Because I don't get the lower part of
the
legs.
Oh, yeah. Because you don't know what he's going to be at first.
Okay. Ah, okay.
Which is really kind of cool the way she drew the little bitty gate. So he escapes out the gate, not because the gate's little, but because the child leaves the gate open.
Oh, okay. Well, in fact, he could just step over the whole
thing. Yeah.
But that's fine because, and stuff like that. Yeah. And so you got the piglet, and
that's Arnold.
Arnold,
one of the favorites. He almost outsells the dinosaur book. I don't get it, but he does.
Uh huh. Yeah. No, I can see the dinosaur right there. You know, coming down.
Yeah. Oh, and he's a happy dinosaur. I mean, but the child has to show a lot of leadership skills in mm-hmm. this book. Mm-hmm. I love that because he has to really think, how am I going to get this dinosaur in? So he tries tag. He tries, you know, hide and seek. He tries all these different games to try to get this dino back to where it needs to go. So he has a lot of leadership skills, and he pushes, he shoves, and finally he gets in front of the dino and says, here's some treats, follow me, and he gets mm-hmm. him back into the gate. But then he has to have responsibility and clean up the whole mess that the dinosaur made.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
There's a big pile of poop in that book.
I can imagine. but also you said leadership skills, but also problem solving.
Yep, and responsibility. So mm-hmm. a lot of things that parents can talk about during that. And we have a little dino, a little plush dino that goes with that book.
Oh, neat. Now, and I want to remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9. This is The Rabbit Hole, Writer's Talk on The Rabbit Hole, and visiting here with the world famous, fabulously known, and great singer, by the way, Lisa Reinicke. Lisa Reinicke here, and author of Football Flyboy, yeah. and Bart's Escape Out of the Gate, and a number of other children's works.
Yes.
Okay, and it is fascinating. So when you, you come out with a book, okay, do you ever go into schools, and do readings? And,
oh, they're my people, Jerry.
Okay, in addition to your Sunday school now.
Oh, yeah, I don't teach Sunday school anymore. I heard enough about all the families out there.
Okay. Well, now you can make up stories based on change the names to protect the innocent.
Now I have more books I can write.
Exactly.
No, but they are my people. I love going into the schools. I love seeing their faces. And the most great thing about everything is these hugs that you get walking out of the school. Mm-hmm. You just carry them with you forever. But they're my people, and I love doing schools.
Nice. And so people can get a hold of you to, teachers can.
Yeah. We have, on our website, we have how mm-hmm. to contact us. We have what we do at schools, any school event that we also have. I want to tell you about this, is we have curriculum that is, was written by the Colorado teachers for Colorado standards for Wings and Feet. It starts at pre-K, goes up to fifth grade. And I know that sounds like, oh, wow, fifth grade for a picture book. But Wings and Feet has so much in it about anti-bullying, the circle of life, science. It's so chock full of things it's written in cadence. So it goes into a lot of things for those older kids, too. But you can get that curriculum online that's free.
Oh, very well.
On our website.
And it's on your website. Mm-hmm. Tell me the website right now. We'll come back to it.
It's just lisareinicke.com.
And Reinicke is easy to spell.
Oh, it sure is. It's a nice German name.
Yeah.
R-E-I-N-I-C-K-E.
Okay, so lisareinicke.com. We'll remind everybody before we close up here, but while it's on their mind, because, there might be someone out there who's just driving through and say, hey, I'd like, and maybe they don't even live around here.
The town is packed.
It is. Everybody wants to come to the center of the universe. I'm just
saying.
They
might be turning that dial to find wildlife.
They're all listening to, right here, the goat, right
here. Oh, it is wildlife.
Exactly, it's great stuff. But so you go out and you do presentations or talk to the kids and you're getting some great feedback. From them and from the teachers themselves, I would imagine.
Yes. What we've had them do too, some teachers have done this and it really works well, is we engage with the teacher and say, okay, let's teach kids how to do a book review. So part of what they're going to do afterwards is as important as when I'm there with the class reading and telling about being an author or reading or whatever we're discussing. But afterwards, after we leave, they actually learn how to do a book review. Mm-hmm. And the teacher will send me their book reviews, and I love them.
Mm-hmm. Now, another tact to use with, and maybe you do, and the teachers do, is have the students predict what's going to happen in a story. You've only read a couple chapters, so what happens?
Okay, you hit on a good point that I didn't even think about.
I was
about.
A teacher. You so I taught English, so I know this stuff.
Oh, no. Don't look too close. What we did actually with Bart is I had a concept for the dino. So we went into one of the schools and we let them name the dino. We let them help predict what was going to happen. We helped them. We let them help write how that they were going to catch him. So we, and then we awarded the school the so many books after the book came out because they helped name Bart.
Very
with
nice.
Wings and Feet, Swanson Elementary School helped name Wings and Feet. So I went in and I read them the story before it was all finished. And I said, I just don't have a name for this book. So they helped name Wings and Feet.
Very nice. So you have a captive beta reader group.
Hey, there's no better group than a kid reading a book.
Well,
but if the parent doesn't
yeah.
like it, they're not going to read it either.
Right, right. And so to get it out there, but because you want something, not even it's going to sell, but also that's meaningful. So, you know, again, where do these ideas come from? You know, like you say, you wake up at 2:15 in the morning and there it is. Well, maybe you were sitting down there at Swanson Elementary and this little kid just says, well, what about the, and you know, what a great idea.
Yeah, and I really don't know where, one day this a line came to me on Wilhelmina, the next one that's coming out, Wilhelmina's Wish. It says, Wilhelmina had one wish. She wished she didn't look like this. Mm-hmm. So that was the start. And I said, well, that line is so important because how many kids out there, especially little girls right now, that they're in that place in their life, people are making fun of them or they don't like the way they look. And at the end of the story, Wilhelmina changed their wish, obviously, because we couldn't leave it like that. But mm-hmm. I felt like that line was really important to write something around. So I started out with one little line in that one and finished it.
That's powerful because it's that whole idea of self-image.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
Yeah. And, you know, initially when little kids are little kids, they're playing in a sandbox. You know, but as they get a little bit bigger, then something, you know, maybe carry a little extra weight or they got big ears or whatever it is. And then it really hits when you get to middle school.
It's sometimes, too, we can think so much about our own self-image that we don't see the other person. And that's where we go with this book, is that she does meet a wise old owl that cannot see. So, you know, with an owl, that's big for an owl to be able to see.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't see her. So he can't mm-hmm. see what she looks like, but he sees her heart.
Mm-hmm.
She changes her wish and she becomes less focused on herself and more focused on others, which I think is a big thing for kids.
That's powerful. Yeah, because it's not only self-acceptance, but then it's turning the energy mm-hmm. outward to others.
Right.
You know, and then acceptance through others too. And then the whole idea of judgment.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's going to get judged because she can't fly because that brow... She can't get off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I have another one after this one. And I don't know where it came from. Harry the Fairy, not Harry, H-A-R-R-Y. It's going to be crossed out. It's Harry, H-A-I-R-Y.
Okay.
Harry the Fairy. I don't know where we're going to go with that.
Oh.
But it's going to be a hairy fairy.
I can imagine. You know, maybe it'll be a bald hairy fairy.
It would be a good one. Yes, Harry.
You know.
Everywhere except on the top of his head.
Okay, we're brainstorming here. I love this here. Okay, so I want my name mentioned.
But that little girl's had one. That little boy has needed one too.
Well, okay, but think of it this way too, because we think of bald. Okay, because I'm bald. All right, it's a natural phenomenon.
I have a 38-year-old that's bald.
Okay, how about children who go through chemo?
Oh gosh, yeah, that didn't even come to my mind, and that's important.
There you are.
That is important.
Yeah. You know, because it's not something from nature, you know. I mean, we're born with the body we have.
Right.
But if, you know, you have cancer and, you know, we see little children all the time without hair,
yeah.
You know, simply because of the treatments and so forth. Okay. So there's your story.
That is a story right there. And I want to tell you real quick while we noted on that. I work a lot with Mercy Ships. I don't know if you know what they are. So they're a floating hospital. So they there's a couple of ships now. And by the way, Football Flyboy, Buster's is going to be the post office on board Mercy Ship, the latest one that they're building. So that was kind of cool with those letters coming in. It's going to be named Buster's. But it's a floating hospital, and so they go to countries that don't have medical care available, and they bring people to the ship, and the ships are the operating rooms. So I work a lot with those, so that's a subject that's really close to my heart. Maybe Harry might have to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, maybe just gets with another character in the story.
Mm-hmm. And Mercy Project, too, is another one where they go and they rescue kids that are in slavery.
Yes.
And they actually help the village to be able to sustain itself so the kids don't have to, because a lot of times what they'll do is they'll rescue those kids out of slavery and their parents will send them right back into slavery because there's not enough money to keep them out of that. So what they do is they've gone in now and they put fish farms in each village so that people have enough food to eat and the kids don't have to go back into slavery. So a lot of that's really on my heart too. So maybe Harry might have to get into that.
Yeah. You know, and this is where it starts, you know, that sort of stuff. So, you know, the idea that's in the consciousness initially, but then let it germinate. It's kind of like when you, you know, and one parable I will draw from the Bible is the seeds, you know, and the farmer goes around and throws the seeds wherever, and some of them fall on rock and in thistles and, mm-hmm. and others in fertile ground. So what goes into the fertile ground? And that's the imagination. And like you say, you wake up until, you know, at 2:15 in the morning, and you go, okay, really?
But, and you were my water just now.
There you go.
And you watered the seed.
I'm an Aquarius. That's the water bearer. So it's all synchronistic here. Oh, my God. The universe is...
we're in Colorado. People are going to start to wonder what's going on here, right?
Let them wonder. Let them wonder. You know, that's the whole idea. Because that's the great thing about writers is that we do live in this other fantasy world out there. You know, and so we can have these conversations. Now, other people could be sitting around going, like, oh, okay, you two, a little bit like this. And we're saying, well, but you enjoy what we produce.
But I want to do something about aliens, too. There's a story about my kids roped. So we used to take them all over the country roping. And in Alamosa, that's where the cattle mutilation and stuff was supposed to have been down there. Right. So I went into one of the shops that had the UFO things in there. And I'm saying, so if we wanted to see an alien tonight, where would we go? And my kids ducked down under the counter like, oh, that is not our mom. But without missing a beat, the lady said, oh, if you're wanting to see aliens, go outside Route 3 or something.
See, and that's what, you know, to go into the, because I think we end up, Lisa, so often in our very left brain society that everything's objective and, you know, we need to make money and we need to do this, you know, and all this other stuff. And
we do have to eat, though.
We do. Okay, I get that. And, you know, but we get so locked into that. And that's when I started teaching, you know, one of the early lessons in my teaching career, I was teaching middle school at the time, is to get rid of rows. Don't put kids in rows, because as soon as you do that, you are now putting in structure and classification and so forth like that. And you lose the corner, because when you look in a V, right?
You
don't see what's happening to you.
And those poor kids that are on the ends just got lost.
Yeah, and some of them want to get lost. And so I started putting my desk in like a horseshoe so that there was never a student who was more than three desks away. And the ones that I, you know, one of the strategies, first day, they come in, see the ones who are going to go to the sides there, don't want to be or whatever. And then I start working and bring them over into the center, get them included there, you know, in that. So whatever strategies we can use there to incorporate, you know, to get people to... leave that left brain occasionally. And
think outside of what's your norm.
Yeah. You know?
And you know, we hear, I know I talk a lot, but I do listen a lot to other people's stories, because I love to hear their stories. They have a lot of stories, and those sometimes those kids that are on the outer limits mm-hmm. have the story that they need to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And once they tell it,
mm-hmm.
they're free to mm-hmm. join.
And by reading good literature, they can see themselves within the story. Okay,
yes.
Whatever it is. So let's say hypothetically, maybe it's not the little boy himself who is going through chemo, but his little sister is.
Mm-hmm.
And how she might be getting teased or whatever like that.
Right.
And he's going to stand up for her in some way. And so it validates his feelings. And that's what's so important
for
us.
You know, I want to go back to, you brought something good up here. I want to go back to Bart's escape at the gate for just a moment. So the child did make a big mistake, and our children make mistakes. And so sometimes those mistakes, they think, this is so big, I can't make up, I'm doomed, I can't do anything about it. Well, as we go through the story, yes, he does, you know, manage to fix the problem. But at the end, he gets a lot of, all the neighbors and the people come together around him, and he says, I'm sorry that I caused all this problem. Well, they gather around him and forgive him, and it shows the outcome of what seemed impossible can be done, and that's how I signed that book. Because with kids, a small mistake seems like, I ended the world.
Yes. Yeah. And how much of that gets transferred into adulthood?
Yes.
For many adults, that's also the case, because they weren't able to, or taught, or allowed to, you know, reach and say, okay, it's just a mistake and nobody's dying from it. Okay. Now, if I did something really stupid, set the house on fire, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, you left the gate open and the dog ran out. Okay. Sometimes there's tragic results.
And
of that.
The dog. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that would, not good.
But then again, that's a lesson in life, and you'll never leave that gate open again.
No.
You know, so, no,
it's
great.
Important, too, that kids learn from these stories, is because sometimes we hide our mistakes. It's okay not to hide them.
Mm-hmm.
Just let it out and fix it.
Yes, and that's a great lesson for adults to learn, too. You know, I have this phrase that I just say, I wish more people would say, use it. I blew it.
Yeah.
I blew it. I made a mistake. Okay, great. Okay. And I'm sorry I caused you pain or something of that nature, or this made life difficult.
Because our actions do fall over to others. I mean,
absolutely.
Blend the neighbor's grass and their flowers and a whole bunch of stuff. So it does cause harm to other people, but it's not the end of the world.
It's not, because one of the other great things about humans is that we love to forgive.
We do, don't we?
We
it
do.
Frees us.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. And it's like, okay, you know.
But those who don't ask, if you don't ask for it, then people just harbor and say, well, he doesn't even know what he did. But
right. Resentment.
Right. But if you say, oh gosh. And sometimes I don't know that I did anything, you know, or said anything that hurt somebody's feelings. But once I find it out, you know, I really, I had no clue that hurt your feelings, and I am so sorry. And a lot of times that's just a freeing moment. What did it take? 1 second?
Yeah. And that's a great thing, you know, like, and I see where a parent is reading your book with his, you know, her daughter, son, and maybe there's something that the child, this is mom, you really hurt me when, you know, because mom was just angry, or she was so super busy and blew him off or whatever.
Well, sometimes we just had enough.
Yeah.
I have a lot of kids.
Mm. My mother had 13. She always had enough. Slap now, ask
you
later.
You know, there's one thing in Football Flyboy. Sorry, I get off topic a lot. I have ADD, if you haven't noticed. But in Football Flyboy, there's a place in there, because he's the baby, and I don't know if you knew this in the story, but I didn't know his name till he died, and we found out his real name. But he was the baby, so all the girls called him, all of his sisters, older sisters, called him what they wanted to. Well, Ruby Lee, and we learn a lot about Ruby in the book, but Ruby always resented Dad because he was the baby, the long-awaited son, the chosen child. She says he was the only child because he never did anything wrong. Well, one day he came to this table and he said, he was a teenager, and he said, "Biscuits again?" And grandma just, his mom just reached up and whacked him, backhanded him away from the table. And I said, you know, there wasn't a mean bone in her body, but between the husband that was out on a wingding, dancing and drinking the night before, and this surly teen at the table, and four squabbling sisters, she probably just had enough, and it, boop.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. I just saw my mother doing that to someone else who's sitting here right now.
Oh, you!
I'll knock you upside the head, and she did, too, so, oh, well.
Sometimes moms have just, you know, you filled us up to the limit. We can't do nothing else.
That's hilarious, so... Oh, this is fantastic. Well, we're just about out of time. Oh, it's hard to believe, you know.
Oh, I just enjoyed this. It's like talking to a friend and had a great time. Thanks.
No, you're welcome. And we are friends. So,
I know.
Yeah. And we met at the Book Nook last year.
We did.
At Georgetown
Christmas
morning.
We're going to do that again this year. And mm-hmm. I'm going to join you guys over there.
Mm-hmm. And you'll have your regular booth
in the market. But we're going to... tell mm-hmm. people where we are. We're going to do both places this year so we can help people know that. Mm-hmm. And this might be the last year we do the market, depending on how this works. But I think we need to let people know that there's that other place down there. The Heritage Center.
Yes.
So it's a little ways away, but gosh, you can get out of the cold over there. I don't know why people don't just go over there.
Yeah, and then we have hot chocolate and apple cider.
Yeah.
And it's not actually that far. It's, you know, in Georgetown, it's two blocks, but really they're short blocks. It's less than a regular city block.
Yeah, we just need to know it's over there. So we're just going to tell people about it. You can go over there and get warm, and it's a cool building.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's old and cool, and it creaks, and it's got these wood that makes these character noises. It's great.
Yeah, it is, and built in 1874.
Oh,
about the time I was born. So, Well, thank you. You know, I show my carry my age well. No, it is great, and you know, we started it last year and had a great reception. So. We're doubling.
And I met you over there, too.
You did, and it's great. And here we are talking now, and
And there's going to be some great authors. I know a lot of them that are over there. And you find things that aren't in Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
Or the My Little Pony and the Twin Sisters of Frankenstein or whatever that kids go, "Can I have My Little Pony?" You're going to find some great books.
And there's right now I have 30 different authors coming, not all on the same day because the max we can have is 24, but just a wide variety of fiction, nonfiction, children's, young adult, adults, whatever, Colorado history and so on. And they're there for the day to talk about their works and they'll sign them for you.
Lady, and I can't remember her name, that she does the birds. And that sounds kind of strange to say, you know, that this is a great book because it's... but she paints them.
Yes.
And they're beautiful works of art. I mean, if you buy this book in a hard copy, it's a beautiful work of art that you would never put away.
Yes. It's amazing stuff. Like you say, it's not necessarily you'd see in Barnes & Noble. Or that's the problem. You go into Barnes & Noble, what even the Tattered Cover, our venerable bookstore in Denver... You're just, oh my God.
Oh, there's so much.
Yeah, you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, and you just have to keep picking them up and reading them until you... And that was another interesting thing that happened last year. You just have to cut me off when we're done. That was another interesting thing last year is I had several people that were, you know, grandparents, aunts and uncles that were picking up books and reading them and saying, this is a good one, or mm-mm.
Yeah.
They were looking for something different, something that was going to really be a keepsake and a teachable moment to the kid.
And everyone's going to have a different, you know, we could have it, you know, this child is having this experience, this one over there is having that experience there. And, you know, they just happen to come by at the right time to look and said, oh my God, yeah, my grandson's got cancer. And, thank you. And next thing you know, they got a story, you know, for that child. And the only way you know that is to show up and go into the room and start looking around. And it's just like, oh my God, I'm a kid in the candy store with
that stuff. I just want to buy them all.
Right.
And then sometimes I get them home and I wish I could take it back.
Yeah. No. See my bookshelf. Oh, my God. I just like, oh, I get it. But it's all great. So, Lisa, thank you so much. People want to get your books. Let's talk about your website one more time.
It's lisareinicke.com. So it's LisareinicK, as in Charlie. Reinicke is the last name. And if you get it from our website, you can also find those great little things that go with them. Because we have the puppets to go with the book. So those that can't sit still, they get the little thing to hold on to.
I think there's drop-down menu. It says fun stuff or something.
Yes, it is. But also, if you go to the bookstore, the product is there too. Okay. But fun stuff is a lot. We have so much fun stuff that's free for kids.
Yeah, well, that's good stuff here. So, all right. Looking forward to seeing you at the Book Nook at Christmas Market.
Yep.
In the meantime, keep doing it. And then, so if anyone would like to get a hold of you, and of course, you could do it through the website, and you'll be more than glad to come into their
I respond to everybody. If you get on there and you contact me, I'll write you back. Also, on Facebook, if you do Lisa Reinicke Author, I'll correspond with you there, too.
Right on. Okay. So we're approaching down at the end here, and here we go. So just a reminder, everyone, this is Jerry Fabianco on KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9. This has been Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, visiting here with Lisa Reinicke, and I will be back in a couple weeks with more authors. So in the meantime, be good, be safe, be kind, and love one another, and take care. Bye now.